Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, it's John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Our guest this week is Jannik Sinner. He turned 19 this weekend, on August 16th, in fact, and he is a young up-and-comer on the ATP Tour, currently ranked inside the top 75. He's the only teenager in the top 100, and I wanted to talk to one of the kids about COVID. We've heard from a lot of veterans. We've been talking a lot about Serena Williams. We had Sam Querrey on last week. But I wanted to get the perspective of a teenager who had a lot of momentum and then it suddenly stopped. So that's a lot of this conversation at the risk of tainting the jury pool. This is a lovely, lovely kid. He is prone to storytelling in a way that most teenagers are not. And you just hope he never changes. So we talk a little bit about what this year has been like for Jannik Sinner. He talks a bit about his unlikely backstory and his unlikely tennis geography. We do not root in the press box or on the Zoom call, but it is hard not to like this kid. So without further ado, here from Monaco, about to board a flight to the U.S., here is young Jannik Sinner.
Hi there. Thank you for spending some time. Good afternoon.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's how are you?
Good. I don't know if anyone knows how to answer that, but we're doing okay. Thanks. How are you? Where are you?
I'm actually fine because here in Monaco, it's quite hot weather and everything. So it's good actually.
It's good.
Yeah. Where are you now? Sorry.
I'm outside New York. So you'll be
and
coming
how is
here
the situation
soon.
There? Yeah, exactly.
New York is better. The rest of the United States not so good, but New York is it's a lot better than it's probably a lot like Italy. It was a lot better than it was in March and April. But how have you experienced the last 6 months? What's this been like for you?
Well, when I've been in the Wells, obviously, mm-hmm. and I've been playing the Challenger there and preparing the Master Series.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been practicing quite a lot there and everything was fine. And normally when something happens, some players say something, you know, and in the locker room and everything was silence and everything. And then one day, I don't remember which day exactly, they canceled the tournaments. And I think not many players knew that. And from that point, we were a little bit confused because we were not sure if we stay for Miami. And I was even in the entry list in Phoenix, Challenger in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was a little bit confusing. So we didn't know what to do exactly. So we decided to stay there a few more days to practice. And then when they canceled Miami, we went back home. I came immediately here to Monaco. And we've been in lockdown for quite a long time. I bring with me the physical coach, and I've practiced at home with him for the first month. And then after, we started to play tennis a little bit, because in Italy we could. Right. A little bit, so we went back and forth. It's like 25 minutes by car. So we've practiced, not every day, but three times a week. And then after 2.5 months of lockdown, it was like normal practice, twice a day, one day a week off. So it was quite tough. Obviously, it's tough, but I think every player is missing the competition, and that's like the most. That was what we are missing. And me personally, it's the competition, because playing tennis, it's okay, because it's that what I choose to do in my life, and it's that what I like to do. So it's playing tennis, but we would like to have some competition, and hopefully in there, New York, it's going to be good.
I was thinking though, you're 18 years old, and you're 5,000-6,000 miles away from home. What was it like for? I mean, no one had ever been through anything like this, but I was thinking, you're a teenager and you're in the middle of California, and all of a sudden you see this scary news. What was that like for you?
Well, I was more worried about my family, to be honest, because Italy, our part, because we're very, very North Italy, it was okay. But I was more worried about them, you know. For me, it's, I'm always watching first, to other people if they are good or not around me. So it's my family came first for sure. Myself, it was, I don't say worried about, but I was like, you know, I didn't know what's going to happen next. And I think every player had this problem. So we actually booked the flight quite early. So we had the secure flight back, and right. Yeah, and then I didn't went home because there the situation in Italy was very bad, so I decided to come here in Monaco, and I was alone with the fitness coach. So it's important to have always good relationships, you know, with people around you. And I think with my fitness coach was always good. It's sometimes it's just more than a coach, you know, it's like a coach and friend and everything together. So because we've been stuck here for like 2 months together, so it's not that easy. Right. And I've been calling obviously my family every day. I made WhatsApp call, video calls, mm-hmm. and everything. So it was actually quite okay, I have to say.
So have you not been? So just to be, have you not been home? Have you not been to your home?
I've been home. I've been home. If I remember, I've been home 3 weeks ago. I've been home for 3 days. Okay. And for sure, okay, I don't remember if I went home one more time. I'm not sure about that. I don't think so, if I remember right.
Everybody's okay?
Yeah, everybody's okay, thank you. Everybody's good, and everything is good. Even my friends are fine, so it's good. But for sure, after Indian Wells, I came here and I've been here stuck for 3 months. So I've been not at home for quite a long time, for sure.
Right.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Tell me about your hometown. I looked where it was on the map, but I think most people hear Italy and they think of, you know, Rome and Florence and Milan. You're from a very different part of Italy. Tell me about your hometown and your upbringing.
Well, our part where I'm living, it's 7 kilometers from Austria. So we are very, very close to Austria. And the first language there is not even Italian. This is like a German dialect.
Right.
And we are studying Italy in the school. And there is obviously in the winter it's quite cold, but very beautiful, I have to say. There's like snowing quite a lot, but you can do many things there, and that's what I like. And there's the nature. I think people are a little bit different than Italians, you know. It's
right.
Like they are very they are like calm guys. They are trying to do always like simple things, and there the life is very simple. And as I said, you know, they're going to the mountains. They sometimes go to the seas. We had quite a lot of seas, so we have quite a lot of seas in our parts. It's easy life, you know. It's very easy.
Right.
And everything is quite clean, you know. It's not plastic, you know. Some guys go around and put plastic around here. There is everything okay, you know. It's like clean, everything clean and full of nice people. And that's good.
I know you like AC Milan, but you're probably closer to Bayern Munich. You're probably closer to southern Germany than you are to Milan.
Exactly. No, many people around there are cheering for Bayern Munich. So many. That's full. On our part, it's full. But I went away when I was 13 and a half from my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down and I meet obviously some people, Italian people here in the academy and everything. And I was not following football that much. And when I've been 16, now 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I've been in the apartment with another guy, which is a little bit younger than me, and we spoke quite a lot, And he said, no, I'm a Milan fan. And I said, oh, okay, really? And he said, what are you cheering for? And I said, no, I'm not cheering for anybody. But, you know, I like playing football, but I'm not like the guy who is watching so much. And he said, no, come on, you have to watch, you have to watch. And then sometimes we went out, we went to see Milan and then like started to, yeah, that I'm sure Milan with him. And that's like kind of cool story. And like last year in the next gen, we had the tickets for Milan to watch in a very, very good spot in the stadium. And that was even him because he was like doing a little bit sparring of me or we have been practicing together a little bit. I bring him with me and then I said, come with me, watch the match. And he said, yeah, okay. But, you know, I don't have that good space, that good spot here in the stadium. I said, no worries. I go up to you and we will come down. And then we came down. And that would have been me, him, another guy, and my brother. So it's been a beautiful night. And Milan lost. I know Milan lost, but it was okay, actually.
What I see you have one brother. What do your parents do? What's your background?
Well, my dad is cook.
Oh wow!
He's cooking, and my mom is. Now I don't know how to say it in English. You know, in the restaurant when she, you know, goes to take the plates and then can give it to the other guys. I don't know in Italy how in English how to call it.
It's like it's like Djokovic. You have a restaurant in the mountains.
Yeah, but no, it's not ours. I mean, it's not ours. They've been working there for quite a long time. And till last year, my mom was working there. Now this year, because at home we have some apartments. We have apartments and which are from my grandma and grandpa. And now my mom is helping there a little bit, you know, to clean everything up. It's quite a big work. And my grandma and grandpa are quite... You know, they're getting older and a little bit slower. So my mom decided to help them, which the apartments are ours. And there are my mom has been working and my dad is still working there. It's a kind of restaurant and near the mountains. And he's cooking there. So it's
good life.
That's good.
Sounds very nice. You mentioned next gen and you had a very successful tournament and then you come to Australia and you win around there and people are starting to, you know, you're a teenager. I think you're the youngest teenager in the top 100. And then all of a sudden everything stops. And I wonder what this has been like for you mentally. I mean, not so much the tennis, but what has this been like? You have this momentum and then it stops. What has this been like for you to handle mentally?
Well, you know, it's to achieve that what I've achieved last year. It's been everything quite fast, I have to say, because I started to play in futures and I was barely winning a match. And then after we went to Kazakhstan, I made after 25K, I made semis and I started to play a little bit better. Then we flied immediately to Bergamo, which was a good tournament. And I won there and from there started everything a little bit. I started to get a little bit more in confidence. I started to improving day after day and working very hard. And I think these kind of results are coming of all the hard work we have done like the last 4.5 years when I came here to Bordighera. that project, what Ricardo had in his mind and still having in his mind is impressive. So, I think like it's obviously the results, but you know, I'm more happy about the person I am, and we are still kind of working on everything. You know, it's okay. I'm 17 in the world, but you know, it's changing nothing at the end.
Right.
And I'm a guy who is like watching. Who is in tennis 24 hours, you know, a day, and I'm thinking about tennis, and you know, to wake up every morning, sometimes even quite early to practice and doing stuff. It's I feel happy about that, what I'm doing and then what I've done. And but you know, at the end, many people are speaking about me, but at the end I didn't want nothing, you know. And next gen, but at the end, you know, the end I didn't want nothing, so it's I still have to work a lot.
What is the state of your game right now? You know, nobody's obviously played in many months. What's the state of your tennis now?
Well, as I told you, we've been practicing a lot, and very very high intensity. And to be honest, I think not only me but every player is getting a little bit a little bit tired of practice, you know. You know what I say? It's like, okay, we want to practice, but we're getting little bit tired. But in these weeks or in this month, we've been practicing on everything, you know. It's not that I have to say, okay, I practice only on my backhand or forehand. I think on everything. That's what I think we have been working quite a lot. It's been the serve and volley game and the slice and and then obviously all the rest, but you know, it's like going to the net, trying to improve that, and I mean, then it's going to be very interesting when the tour starts again.
What are you expecting? Yeah, what are you expecting from that?
Well, I think a little bit the older guys have more experience, you know, to come back. Maybe they had some injuries, didn't play for a long time, and then they come back and they're starting to win immediately. But I think this situation is a little bit different, because every one of us were feeling well in the wells, and then they put us in the lockdown. It's going to be very interesting for sure. I think the younger guys has been improving physically and obviously and technically. I mean, tennis for sure. Because every player has practiced quite a lot, but you know, it's I think practice and match is something different.
Right. And what is your comfort level getting on a plane and flying to the U.S. now? Are you okay with that?
Well, I'm okay. I mean, we are there and we can see only the hotel and the tennis courts. We come there, they make us the test. We have to stay 24 hours in our room, and then we have to wait to the test if we are positive or negative. And then when we are negative, we're ready to start practicing the first days. And I mean, the quality in Cincinnati is not that far away. So I think it's I go there, it's I don't know with what kind of feelings, because I don't know what to expect, that's for sure. But you know, I think every player is like this. I've been, like here in Monaco, there are many players, you know. There's Aliassim, there's Zverev, Dimitrov, Berrettini, Goffin, so many players. And I've been practicing now here with all these players 2.5 weeks already. So it's for sure the level here is very high, and here the top players or some of the top players are here to practice, and you are lucky enough that you can play with them. So it's I go there for sure prepared, that's for sure. And then the results, I can't say the results for sure.
Right. I think Monaco needs a Davis Cup team. But are you talking are you talking among yourselves? I mean, what are you guys talking about this season? How are you talking about this season with each other?
Me and my team.
No, you and the other players when you're playing with Felix or with Goffin or Zverev. What are you saying about the year 2020?
Well, everyone is saying that's a strange year, you know. It's you know, Dimitrov had the virus, and he's you know, I think every player is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, for sure we have been talking a little bit with everyone, and everyone had done a little bit different things, you know. Some of these guys went home, like Felix went home in Canada. Mm-hmm. I came here immediately, like Berrettini and Zverev stayed there in the US. So, you know, everyone has done a little bit different road, but I think in the same way, you know, I think every one of us practiced. Okay, maybe the first 1 or 2 weeks, some players had off, and but at the end, everyone was practicing for sure, I think. So it's
crazy.
Everyone says it's a strange year. It's going to be very interesting for everyone, because everyone says, wow, it's going to be interesting how everything starts again and how it starts again. How the organization of tournaments are going to do, and every player is a little bit like, you know, what's going to happen like this.
But it sounds as though you've made the best out of a crazy year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I made the best or not, but I took it like a challenge, you know, because at the end of the day, doing nothing, that's not the best choice for sure.
What did you learn about yourself this year?
There was like two things. The first thing is how important family is. Mm-hmm. And you know, Italy was in a very bad situation. Many people were dead about this virus and everything. And how important tennis is for me, because missing competition is tough, you know. And like last year, I've played many matches. This year was the goal was making 60 matches. Which now it's going to be very, very tough, for sure.
Right.
But, you know, I think like, at the end, tennis is sport, you know, this is what you like to do, day after day, and family is family. And this is going for the first place for sure. It's, I was very, very worried about them, you know, especially grandpa and grandpa, which are getting older. And when I heard that Italy was in a bad situation, I was quite worried about that for sure. But fortunately, everything went well. And right. And now on our part, it's very much tourism, and many people are going there, and now starting the same once more, you know, with a little bit of cases and everything. So it's for sure, I think it's not over yet, that virus.
Right. And I was thinking about your, I mean, we all know that you were a champion skier as a boy. So I'm thinking between the skiing and the tennis, most of your life has been spent competing. It must have been strange to suddenly spend 6 months with no competition as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been like skiing. I was okay. I was little and everything, and I was quite okay skier. But you know, it's I always love to compete. I always love to see who is better in this day. You know, even if you lose sometimes, let's see the other day what's going to happen. Because every day is a little bit different, and I've been playing a little bit football as well, and there's a little bit competition, maybe a little bit different because there's like the team, but the competition is always there, and I like that kind of lifestyle, you know, to compete. And sometimes when I was a little boy with 16, 15, 16, sometimes me and my coach, when we lost, we went immediately to do go-karts, you know, because right. go-karts. So we went there. Obviously, he was the much better driver, or he still is the much better driver. But I like to do these kind of things, you know, right. And obviously, like now, it's going to be tough. You know, the sport is going to be tough. You have to take away some things, you know, because at the end of the day, the priority is tennis, and sometimes you have to rest a little bit, you know. So it's just to go to sleep like 2 hours in the afternoon or so if you have time. It's for sure good for the body. So you have to be very. Yeah, you have to know what's good for your body for sure.
Right. So the bad news is you can't go karting after matches, but the good news is you're back to competing. You'll be flying here maybe this weekend, right? Soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we are flying Saturday morning. From Milan, so, and I think many players or some players will take the same flight for sure from Milan.
And then you'll celebrate your 19th birthday in New York then.
Yeah, I think in the room. Yeah,
okay, probably not. not imagined. I imagine, but.
But it's okay. It's okay. It's
okay. All right. This was lovely. I really appreciate hearing your perspective. Again, mm-hmm. Happy birthday in the room.
And yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
When you're out of the bubble, I look forward to talking again. Thanks.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you very much. Stay safe, you and your family. It's been an honor to speak to you. And thank you very much for your time.
You as well. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Ciao, ciao.
All right, what a lovely kid. Thank you to Yannick Sinner. We wish him well before he departs and comes to the U.S., Cincinnati masquerading as New York, and then the U.S. Open, and then presumably flies back for the clay. Jamie, thank you as well for your remote producing. As always, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that conversation, but boy, that was impressive, especially for a young kid over Zoom speaking in his second or third language. He also is too modest to say it, but he's also been very charitable financially with COVID relief, which I think is saying something for a guy who has not yet made his millions. But boy, if this is tennis's future, along with, you know, Coco Gauff and Kenin and Felix and Tsitsipas and Medvedev, I think the sport will be just fine post Big Three and Serena. So Jamie, welcome in. Nice to see you virtually. And you can give me a second to decompress, but I was very impressed with young Yannick Sinner there.
Yes, thank you. And 18-year-old, he has a pretty high ranking. And I just wanted to get your thoughts. What was it about interviewing him? You've obviously talked to a bunch of players, young and old, but we've had a few young kids on the podcast. What's different about him than some of the others we've interviewed?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, sometimes you talk to kids and it's, you know, the proverbial pulling teeth, and you get a lot of one word answers, and you come stacked with questions because you're not sure how the dialogue and the discourse is going to go. This and Coco Gauff falls into the same category. This is the opposite. This is as you heard for yourself. This is someone who is happy telling a yarn and telling a story, and he had a lot to say for himself. And again, I think we've been focusing a lot during COVID about, is this good for Serena? Is this a disguised blessing? What does this do for Federer? What does this do for Nadal? Are the Bryan brothers going to restart it in 2021? And I think one thing we may have missed is that this must be really jarring on a number of levels for some of the younger players. Some of it is just these are kids and their life has been turned on its head. But I also think professionally, they've never had anything like this. Here you're Coco Gauff or you're Sinner, and you have all of this momentum and these match wins, and your career is really starting to gain traction, and then all of a sudden you go 6 months without playing a competitive match, which, you know, in this case, 6 months is a not insignificant portion of his life. So I was sort of interested in his perspective. And I remember talking to him in Australia and thinking, man, this kid is quite nice. And I know the ATP guys say he reminds them of Roger Federer 20 years ago as this kid who's happy to engage and speaks a number of languages and has no problem being interviewed whatsoever. I don't know if you caught it at the tail end or, you know, this is a teenager who, it was an honor to speak to you, he said to me. So yeah, I was very impressed. And I think you know what else struck me as long as you brought it up, Jamie, you hear Italian tennis player, and I think people assume, oh, this kid must come from, you know, a family in Rome, or he must practice where they play the Italian Open at the Foro Italico. He's literally on the Austrian border in the northeast corner of Italy. And I don't know if you heard him talk about it. I mean, he's closer to Munich, Germany than he is to the nearest Italian city. So it's another one of these rejoinders to the notion that the tennis players are just a bunch of country club kids. I mean, here's a guy who grew up in the Italian Alps, and his parents, as you heard, work in a restaurant that he was quick to tell me was not their own. That does not sound like a country club upbringing, but boy, what a nice, sweet kid. And you wish him well. He seems to have a good attitude about all this. And that was really quite an unexpected call, and I really enjoyed that.
Reminds me a little bit of another member of the 21 and under club who also was impacted in a similar way by all this, which is Sofia Kenin, who, of course, you know, was on this roll, wins her first major title. But she, personality-wise, when you talk to her and you interview her, and we had her on the podcast as well, she's, of course, a little bit older, but similar, I feel like, in a way where there's no pulling teeth, as you said, to talk, and she's very open and honest, and she just speaks, and it's really nice to have a conversation with a young player like that. So, as you said, this 21 and under club has a lot of good ones in it.
I'm curious what you might have some thoughts here. I mean, I think it's sort of an interesting road to go down of why that is. I mean, I remember when I started my career and you had, you know, Martina Hingis was very chatty. I mean, sometimes these teenagers just are completely unguarded and unobstructed and every thought gets articulated. And other times they're very, very shy. And yet the younger players in tennis today, Coco Gauff is very outgoing. And I don't know if it's social media. I don't know if it's that the big three plus Serena take up so much oxygen that it sort of eases things for the younger set. No one is shouldering the world on young Yannick's shoulders. No one's expecting him to win the French Open or a major. So maybe it's a different dynamic than younger prospects, what they used to go through. But yeah, it's really, and I think that trend is, I'm not sure it's like this in other sports. I mean, I think it's sort of easier and easier to avoid connection and contact and speaking publicly. And yet in tennis, it seems as though young player after young player is very happy to engage with even, you know, I mean, I'm candidly old enough to be the guy's father. And you heard for yourself, he could not have been, you know, more of a delight and more candid.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think social media is definitely a part of it. I think you've mentioned this before, that in covering Venus and Serena for the, you know, length of their career and interviewing them and speaking to them when they were teenagers, super young, they were also pretty open and, you know, talked a lot differently with you as a journalist than they do now. So I think it's a little bit of both. You know, they of course have mastered the, you know, answering questions when they don't want to and things like that. But it is an interesting thing. I think social media probably has a lot to do with it. And I think also the fact that these players are being put in situations as young kids that some of the older players may not have, you know, given things that are going on in the world and things that they're being asked to do or to speak on. So it's interesting, but as I said, a lot of good ones in the under 21 and under club.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think some of this is probably, we could do a whole podcast on this. I mean, I wonder if some of it doesn't come from the top and people see how someone like Roger Federer conducts himself with the media and how it's a cordial relationship. It's a professional relationship. And you say, if Roger Federer comports himself like this, I can as well. I wonder if some of it isn't the fact that these players are aware that you're compensated, yes, by prize money, but also by the way you're perceived and image and off-court earnings and the, you know, show yourself to be engaging and endearing. I mean, again, Coco Gauff, who I see out of the corner of my right eye as she takes the court against Sabalenka. We are recording this on Wednesday. I mean, Coco Gauff has clearly mastered that already. And I also wonder, and I think this is something that explains a lot in tennis right now, I wonder if these extended careers don't have something to do with this as well. And if you've got 5 years to make hay and really make your bones, it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of sort of time compression. You don't have time to deal with extraneous things like interviews. If you see yourself playing until age 35 and you're 18 years old, maybe you feel like your relationship with time and maybe you feel like your time is a little more expansive, and things like interviews, you don't see them as the burden that you might if you felt more rushed and compressed. Just a pet theory. Let me ask you this, Jamie, to change topics. I can only see you through Zoom, so you'll have to tell me, but do you have a case of Top Seed Open / Bluegrass Orthopedics fever?
Top Seed Open fever. Yes. I think, well, first of all, I mean, we're very happy to see tennis back. The WTA, of course, has done an amazing job along with everyone else who's put it together. It's an interesting situation, you know, seeing, it's still weird for me to see athletes wearing masks, you know, as they're walking out onto the court or, you know, just walking around facilities. And so that's definitely an adjustment. And then of course the whole setting of everything. I mean, this is very different than I think the US Open will be in a stadium that has a capacity over, you know, 20,000 fans. This is very makeshift. It feels makeshift. It kind of feels like you're watching a challenger or something, right, which is very funny when you see Serena hit the ball in that environment. But, you know, I think what Joe Konta said it this week, you know, it still feels like a match, but it also, you know, she said something to the effect of, it feels like I haven't played a match in 6 months. You know, it still feels like one, but I am rusty basically. And I need to find my, you know, beat again and figure this out. And so I thought that's really interesting. And I think that's why it's been fun to watch, because, you know, these players have been itching to play, but that doesn't take away from the fact that playing at home and playing on your practice court and practicing is just so different from actually playing a match against an opponent.
It's so funny. We keep trying to handicap which players will be impacted and how. And someone, I want to say Courtney, and we always, Courtney's our catch-all for every line we hear, every tweet that we can't quite cite appropriately. But I think it was Courtney who said that for players that coming out of the juniors, for Coco Gauff, they're used to playing in circumstances. This looks like a junior tournament. If you're Fiona Ferro, to pick a name at random, but also someone who's already won a title, having for Felden in Palermo. This is not altogether different. You know, when you're ranked outside the top 100, this is pretty much the tableau. I mean, obviously you don't have masks and social distancing, but yeah, you've got cement mixers behind the court and you've got, you know, your coach, you can hear everything because he's not having to compete with crowd noise. Serena Williams is the one who's not used to competing under these kinds of circumstances. So for every advantage that sort of accords the higher ranked, higher seeded veteran player, there are also potential advantages for the lower ranked players and players coming out of juniors. This looks a lot like probably what Coco Gauff, the condition she was playing in a year ago, 18 months ago. So anyway, it's been interesting. I don't know if you did you catch any of the Williams sisters yesterday, Jamie?
Yeah. I saw a little bit of both matches.
Not a lot of data points here and small sample size, but anything strike you?
Yeah, I mean, so again, interesting to see both players get back into it. I thought Serena actually looked pretty fit and comfortable overall. You know, she obviously dug herself out of a hole there and, you know, pulled a typical Serena like fashion match out, you know, and also for the Venus match, I was actually surprised by Azarenka and the way she was playing. You know, we haven't seen a lot of her over the past few years, frankly. And I just thought that was a very interesting match, you know, to see Venus still out there and, you know, she's still 40. Winning matches.
40. No, I mean, if you had Azarenka out there is remarkable. Venus out there, literally a decade older, is just extraordinary. And, Venus too. Venus overpowered Vika.
Exactly.
So, and now we get, another Williams encounter, the first, needless to say, of 2020. I don't know if you caught that. Jannik Sinner was saying he's going to be on a flight and he expects a lot of other players to be on the flight with him and they are crossing an ocean. And I sort of feel like, barring something absolutely catastrophic, once athletes, we're not talking about driving in from Kentucky, once athletes are crossing oceans to come play an event, I think we work on the assumption that this U.S. Open is happening. And it may be weird and the draw may not be a conventional major draw, but this is going to happen. Are you, where do you stick your pin in and where are you feeling about tennis resuming on this kind of a stage now, Jamie, now that it looks to be no longer this theoretical conversation we've been having all summer, but
right,
it's not as close to a done deal as you can imagine, barring again, something catastrophic.
Right. I think, listen, for tennis in New York at this point, it's happening. Whether or not we can get through the Western and Southern Open and get to the U.S. Open is going to be the key factor, basically. I think, that's really the test for the U.S. Open. And hopefully nothing catastrophic goes wrong in those weeks. But again, I think the USTA is likely prepared to adjust and they have to be very flexible with what's going on. You know, as soon as the PGA Tour restarted, we saw immediately some positive tests there. You know, I think the first positive, there will be a positive test, right? And then it's just a matter of they're making sure that the right protocols are in place and the steps are taken after the fact. And that's going to be the biggest thing, I think. But we have tennis now, and I think we're going to see U.S. Open tennis. And I think you had this conversation in your mailbag today, so I won't say the word, but they will potentially, we're going to have this discussion of the little star next to the U.S. Open.
Little shift eight action. Yeah, what I wrote is I get it. I mean, obviously you look at the draws, you look at the players that aren't going to be there, you look at sort of the lack of preparation. I mean, there are a whole host of factors that certainly would cause you to glance sideways. This is an extraordinarily high draw cutoff, and I don't think we're done. I mean, I think in the next week we're going to see more and more players pull out for a variety of reasons. But I also think that we got to see how this plays out. I think it's ungenerous, I think was the word I used. I think it's unfair to say to all the players, hey, listen, whoever wins this, it's only going to count 60%. I think we have to see how these matches play out. I think we have to see, is there controversy? What is this like on the ground? Before, you know, if this is completely hypothetical, but if, you know, Serena Williams rematches against Andreescu, is it really an asterisk? I mean, if Djokovic plays Medvedev, is that really an asterisk? So I think before we start assigning sort of a lack of weight here, as soon as we start saying this one doesn't count full, I think we need to see how this all plays out. And, you know, maybe we will say this had a hollow feel and player after player had to withdraw and there were positive tests and it just didn't feel like a major. And I'm open to that. But I think it's a little premature before the first ball struck to immediately discount this thing.
I agree. I think that's a fair point, as you say. I don't think before the tournament even starts, we can say, put it, you know, we need to block this off and say this is something different. I think your point is right about if there are a lot of withdrawals because of positive tests or if things start to really crumble, that's a different story than just saying, oh, because, you know, player X is in here and this number one player has withdrawn. And, you know, that to me is not unlike any other season or year where, you know, someone was not playing because they were injured or someone was not playing because, you know, they were on maternity leave or whatever it is, right? There were all these different things that happened year after year, and they have created the champions that we have now and the players who have major titles. And never before did we say, oh, this has to have an asterisk on it, you know? And so I don't think that we can do that for this. And we've talked about this many times. I think whoever comes out on top is, you know, facing a lot of different challenges that were not there for previous majors. And I think that's, you know, gotta be, if we're going to put any asterisk, it's got to be that one. It's got to be the positive one that, hey, by the way, they won this. And this is also in the situation that they were in when they won this.
Right. Exactly. I think, I mean, the other thing, just as a final getaway thought, as we say, somebody asked me recently, said, what's it going to be like? And I said, you know what? No one has any idea. And the other sports that are playing will say the same thing. I mean, I think we're all kind of getting used to the NBA and we're talking about, you know, the Portland Trailblazers. A lot of the baseball talk is about COVID and the discounted schedules and how close the players are to each other in the dugout. I think the sort of range of outcome here is impossibly vast, and this could be a catastrophe. I think we're all sort of open to the possibility this could be something that we'll all regret having even contemplated. It's also entirely possible this will feel like a normal tennis event and we get to week two and yeah, it's going to be weird when there's this big stadium and we only see six people in the stands, but you know, at some level we're all watching these NBA games and it didn't take long for us to focus on basketball. So I think it's sort of silly to start predicting. I think any of a thousand things can happen. I'm sure there's going to be some controversy. I'm sure there's going to be a false positive. There's going to be threats of litigation. There's going to be someone will inadvertently or advertently, you know, whiff and blow the bubble protocol. I mean, I think everything's going to be in play, but I think we need to sort of wait and see and play it all out. You have a Zoom. I have a Zoom. Jamie, it is always a pleasure.
Thanks so much. It was fun, like always. We still await the U.S. Open news, but at this point, it looks like we're going to continue to see some tennis.
I did not think I would say this, but you know, we have out of the corner of my eye, I see Coco and Sabalenka in Lexington, Kentucky, playing a live match for ranking points, for prize money. So we are back. Jamie, it was a pleasure. Thanks to our guest, Yannick Sinner. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for your guest suggestions, which continue to roll in. Some of them making me laugh out loud. In any case, you can subscribe, leave a review, always helps. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. We'll have another podcast next week. Have a good week, everyone.